Yeah, thank you very much, and it's a great pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk. So the question that I want to address here is why three loops are important. And what I want to argue here is that if you have a super conformal field theory and you do a Feynman graph analysis, you can see basically that at one and two loops, nothing really surprising is happening, and the first surprising things should show up at three loops. So the plan is half blackboard and half slide talk. So first, I will start with the motivation. So why do we expect something new at three loops, and why is two loops, one and two loops, somehow not so difficult? The second thing is then a short review of the formalism in n equal 4. So this is basically to set up the notation and to give you an idea of how these things appear in the most simple setup. And third, I want to talk about the so-called the interpolating theory. And here, three loop results. So the theory was introduced by Gade, Pomoni, and Rastelli. And we have recently a paper where we summarize our three loop results here in that theory. So let me start now with the motivation. So why are three loops interesting? This is the question. So for this, let's have a look at an n equal 1 superspace formulation of, for example, n equal 4 superangles theory, or if you want also the beta deformation, and so on. So the first thing is that we will restrict ourselves, of course, to the planar limit and to scalar operators. So we look to composite operators. Single traces of the form Z fields. These are some complex combinations of the six scalars, some phi fields, Z fields, and so on. And these guys in this n equal 1 superspace formulation are mapped to chiral superfields. So they correspond to chiral superfields. This is what makes the computation simple. So what happens in this formulation? So now let's look at one and two loops. So several things occur. First of all, the flavor manipulations. Is it visible or should I write bigger? It's okay. Flavor manipulations, which we call chiral functions, up to two loop are all corresponding or associated with the Magnon dispersion relation. So this is one thing. I will explain this a little bit more in more detail later. And the second is that we have a very restricted basis of integrals . So what I mean with this is, if you look to the one loop analysis, at one loop basically it's only this integral you have. I call this I1. And if you compute the pole part of it, so you look to the ultraviolet poles of this integral, you find that this is 1 over 16 pi square times 1 over epsilon pole. On the other hand, if you look to two loops, there's also in superspace, you can only find a single one. So this is the two loop integral, it's called I2. This is of this form, and it has a pole part which is 1 over 4 pi to the 4 minus 1 over 2 epsilon squared plus 1 over 2 epsilon. Okay, this is basically what I want to say, two loops. So now, how can we extract the Hamiltonian, the spin chain Hamiltonian, the dilatation operator from this? So you compute the Feynman diagrams to renormalize these composite operators here. there's a label A because there are, of course, several possibilities to rearrange the fields inside of the trace. So then we have the renormalization constant, ZAB, and the composite operator, the bare one before renormalization. So in this ZAB, it's basically something like the identity matrix minus the sum over the overall UV poles of our diagrams. Now, you extract from this the dilatation operator. As follows, you take D is basically the derivative with respect to the Toft mass of the logarithm of the Z. And what you do, where this G, this mu comes in, because you replace the coupling by G times mu to the power epsilon to keep it dimensionless. And then from this, you find the dilatation operator. So you compute the Feynman diagrams, subtract here from one, your UV pools, and then you take this derivative. And one of the important things is that LNZ is free of higher order poles. What I mean by this is that you don't have, there don't exist poles like 1 over epsilon to the power n for n bigger equal to, any bigger equal to, yes. So you can see here, there is already such a pole at two loops appearing. So if you take the logarithm here, where is it here? That means that this pole has to cancel out. And because we have only one integral at two loops and one loop, basically, this condition fixes for you how the one and two loop dilatation operators are related. So there is not, from that point of view, not really
new information. So what I mean from here is that D1 can, from D1 you can determine basically D2 in, if I call D the recoupling expansion, so it's D1, G squared D1 plus G to the 4 D2 and so on. And this thing is kind of universal. Where I mean with universal, that you only have to replace the flavor manipulations according to the theory which you discuss. So it could be a permutation, for example, like in any of four superelements, you know that this D1 is something like permutation minus identity. Okay, so this is what happens to two loops. Use at three loops. So three loops. Here's some news. The first is that there are these flavor manipulations, which I wrote of chiral functions, so flavor manipulations. That exclusively contribute to scattering of impurities. So this is something that doesn't happen at one and two loop, you will see in a second. And the second is they have extended integral basis. So let me give you the list of integrals that appear. So there is this one, which is an extension of this by a triangle. Then you have, you find something which has kind of two bubbles. Find some two bubbles arranged in a different way. This thing you get, and then something like that, where this means these are only triangles, and here are numerator momenta in the integral which are contracted with each other. So there's a scalar product in the numerator. These are all have trivial numerators. And then finally, there is this guy. And that's all you can find. But you can see they have a much richer structure than two loops. So in this, from this you could say that D3 So the free loop part
is the first, in a sense, non-trivial contribution. And you might want to find some new effects, like, for example, a non-trivial function h of lambda, which appears in the coupling and in the dispersion relation, for example, and was observed in the ABJM and ABJ theories, and something new, maybe. Okay, so this was the motivation for us to start looking at the free loop at the free loop sector of this theory, and also to do a computation in the n equal 4 case as a check. So let me now show you very quickly how in n equal 4 these things work. I mean, if there are any questions, please interrupt at any time. I mean, maybe interactive somehow.
So
2 is the short summary of the 4 case.
So here we look, I want to remind you that the superpotential in this theory is of this form. So you have some indices ij, k, which label the scalar fields. So for example, you could say that phi I is taken from z, phi, and psi. So, and these are the complex combinations, the 3 complex combinations of your 6 scalars, and you have, of course, the barred one, which are the anti-chiral ones. So this thing has, let me write it down, it has a coupling, e.g. Young-Mills, and then there is an epsilon tensor, epsilon ijk, and there is the trace of TA, TB, TC of the color. So where this has labeled A, B, and C, color indices. Okay. So there is a fundamental building block in this sector, in this chiral subsector, which gives you the renormalization to one loop. And this is this. So you combine a chiral and an antichiral vertex. Then you have here indices I and J. Here you have index K. And here you have I bar and J bar, let's say, for exiting. So and this, then, is, of course, a contraction of 2 epsilon tensors. Wrong. So I read clockwise. So it's J, I, K. And the other is K, I bar, J bar. And as you see, if I contract the index K, the flavor index K, this thing gives you delta J I bar delta I J bar minus delta I bar delta J J bar. So comparing this to this diagram, you see what happens here. The flavors are interchanged. And here, in this case, the flavor goes straight through. So this is something which has the combination of a permutation operator acting at site I and J, and the other one is something like the identity. Okay, so this is how you get the one-loop dilatation operator. This is the only piece you have to consider in n equal 4. So to show you how this looks like, here is what I just wrote. Here's not what I wrote. So here it is. So in the first line above, you see the superpotential and the conjugate one. Then there is the one-loop graph, which I just wrote. It gives you a flavor permutation and the identity. And then in the next line, you have what you could also in principle have, namely a gluon exchange and self-energy contribution. But now comes a little bit of the power of the superspace, namely if you evaluate these integrals, which are the orange highlighted regions, then the first one gives you the ordinary one-loop integral that I wrote, so you get a divergence. The second turns out to be finite, and the third one is identically zero. So and you find immediately the one-loop dilatation operator as the, if you go through this logarithmic derivative and so on, as 1 minus permutation. So this is how you do the one-loop. So now let's look what happens at 2 loops and higher loops. So what I've written down here is the extension of these
using this as a building block, which appears at higher loops, in terms of higher loop diagrams. So, and what I mentioned before, these so-called chiral functions, are these fixed combinations of permutations and identity which come in. So in the first line, you see it is exactly the one loop term. In the second line, you can combine two of them, and then you get something which is called chi12, meaning the interpretation is there is first something acting between leg 2 and 3, and then between 1 and 2. So you only indicate the first of the interacting legs. And then this is this combination of permutation structures. So it's these four terms here, and you can do some simplifications. And at three loops, you would find something like that, and so on. So these permutations, as you see, are defined as a sum over the lattice side of the composite operator. So you have to insert it at all possible positions. And then you get this product of permutations. And these chiral functions are such linear combinations which are fixed by the fact that the superpotential has this epsilon structure. So this is how the thing looks at high loops. So now let's come to the two-loop calculation. Here are all diagrams which one would have to compute in principle, at least, if you don't know any, I mean, if one doesn't do any simplifications. Where I left only out, the only thing that I left out are one-loop self-energy corrections because they are identically zero. So it's kind of a bunch of diagrams. But there are simplifications. Namely, the first is what we observed with Francesco and Alberto and Daniela in the wrapping paper of the wrapping interactions. Yeah. What's there? Namely, these diagrams in the last row, so the maximum range diagrams, so two loops, the maximum range is range 3, you can basically neglect it if there is just a vector interacting with the rest of the diagram. So this is why you can remove these two lines here. And then, in my paper of last year, in August, I found some finiteness conditions, which you can derive for these kind of supergraphs. And what happens is it allows you to cancel basically everything in the R equal 2 column in the first line. And then you use the finiteness of the self-energy, so you cancel also the first contribution. And your diagrammatic calculation boils down to evaluating these three diagrams only. So here you see the answer. I mean, the answer is just given by this diagram plus its reflection, of course, and then the second of the diagrams is finite, which one, the one which is symmetric, so you don't have to consider, and the first one gives this contribution which is there. And this is the two-loop dilatation operator. And the coefficient you have in front of all of it, if you go through the algebra, the D-algebra, which you have to do in superspace, then all these diagrams are proportional to the same integral. So this is why, in principle, this thing is fixed by the one-loop piece, with the condition that you cancel higher-order poles. So what I mean with this, to be a little bit more precise, I will write it down, is the following. So, writing down for you the z up to two loops, it is 1 minus lambda I1 chi1 minus lambda square, this integral I2 we had before, times chi 1 comma 2 plus chi 2 comma 1 minus 2 times chi 1. So this is basically taking the two-loop answer, which you saw before, inserting it. This is the one-loop answer. This is the minimalization constant. So now this thing here is, if one writes it, one can write it as a square of the one-loop piece. It is chi1 squared minus disconnected contributions. And this one gives only higher order poles anyway. So their cancellation is trivial if you square this, because this is also a higher order pole. The simple pole squared is a square pole, so they cancel trivially. The only non-trivial cancellation takes place somehow in these connected pieces. So, and then, writing this, writing the logarithm, this is minus lambda I1 phi 1.
Minus or plus? See?
Minus I2 plus 1 half I1 square times chi1 square. Minus disconnected. So, and this thing here, if you remember the pole structure, so I2, this I2 had a minus 1 over 2 epsilon pole, 2 epsilon square pole. So this one has a symbol 1 over epsilon pole, so it's squared with a factor 100, they exactly cancel. So, and from this, you can see that this condition fixes for you the overall coefficient. So what we have to do, we now have to go to three loops. And three loops are feasible thanks to these finiteness conditions, which I mentioned before. So what are these? With an idea, it's this. So. Takes a while. So they hold for all diagrams where the composite operator is one particle irreducible connected to the rest of the diagram. So meaning you have to have at least an interaction range of two. So self-energy contributions are explicitly excluded. But if you have this, then you can check out that the overall divergences of the diagrams either cancel among each other or the diagram is finite if one of the following conditions hold. So, and one of the most powerful ones is here that in superspace there has to be a vertex which is not part of a loop. And what I mean with this is, you see here as an example, the first two diagrams, all the vertices are part of the red highlighted regions and they are loop, so they appear in loops with two of the legs. Whereas in the third diagram, this is not the case. So, and therefore, this one you have to consider, and the other one you can throw away from the very beginning. So, and then there are some technical stuff to derive finiteness conditions, which has to concern the D-algebra, which you have to do in superspace. I don't want to go into detail here, but they allow you to derive cancellations for certain diagrams. And to show you how this looks at three loops, here are some of these cancellations, which seem first far from obvious, but after a while, if one looks to them, there's a certain structure. So the first one above, that these diagrams you don't have to consider where one blue line is interacting with the rest of the diagram I mentioned already. This was part of the simplifications for the wrapping corrections. And then the new cancellations here concern diagrams which have next to maximum range, and they show up at, for the first time at three loops. So you have to find combinations like this. And all the combinations which are right down here in the second and third row are canceling their poles. So basically you can throw away these terms from the beginning. But there is a new thing coming in, namely the cancellation is not complete for this next to maximum range diagrams. There's a little bit of a piece remaining.
And this is what is written in the third line.
So roughly speaking, you see that if the interaction with this additional line is by quartic vertices or higher order vertices, then there is no cancellation. But all the other cancellations have the property that if the additional line has only a cubic interaction vertex, then you can throw the diagrams away. So this is, of course, something that helps you to simplify a lot the calculation.
So this was basically what I wanted to say to the n equal 4 case. And now let me summarize the theory, so the interpolating theory. So this is part 3. So this theory is, this interpolating theory is due to Gade, Pomuni, and Rastelli. So what is it? The idea is to find a theory which somehow allows you to interpolate between something like the n equal 4 case and to go beyond that by tuning some coupling constant. So it is a quiver gauge theory. It is an n equal 2 quiver. It looks as follows. So you have two gauge groups. The gauge group is a product, SUN times SUN hat. Let me at the moment write this like this. And then you have here gauge group with gauge coupling constant G and rank N. And here you have G hat, rank N hat. There are some adjoint metafields. It is chiral meta in the superspace formulation, so they are called phi. And then you have some in the other gauge group, which are called phi hat. And then you have some bifundamental metafields, which are called Q tilde. And I draw two lines because they have a global index I dot, which can assume two values. And you have the one, this is Q. The anti-bifundamental ones, which bring you in the other direction. So this is how the theory looks like. So there's a pure global symmetry, which is SU2L times SU2R times U1. This part is the R symmetry. And here, the SU2L is associated with the index I dot, global symmetry. So now from here, this theory is a conformal in the case that n, the ranks are equal, so n is equal in hat. And then you can take the limit, either if you say g is equal to g hat, then you arrive at a Z2 orbifold of the n equal 4 superangles. So here you have all the nice properties that basically the planar spectrum is, so the dilatation operator is the same as in n equal 4. And integrability is known and everything like this. And then you have the other limit where you say that G check can be checked or G hat can be set to 0. And this is n equal to superconformal QCD. So you have the possibility by tuning these couplings, if you have, if you do a calculation, this theory to arrive at, to check out both points. So are there questions so far? Mm-hmm. So let me briefly introduce the chiral closed chiral subsector in this theory. So this corresponds to the SU2 subsector in n equal 4. And this is what we're going to study, closed chiral subsector. So here, because you have now two possible choices for the gauge factor, so you can either choose fields from here, or from combined, you have the following protected states. This is the trace of all phi fields, the trace of all phi hat fields, and a trace of bilinear, so Q, Q tilde, to some power. So always alternating, and then you have indices here, I and J, and the thing has to be traceless and symmetric in all SU2L indices. So in the state that you can generally construct, for example, assume that this is a kind of a vacuum, and then you can furnish this with impurities from Q and Q tilde. So a general state will look like a trace of some phis. Then you get a Q. Then it switches the gauge group because it was the was bifundamental. It switches to the other gauge group, phi hat. You get a bunch of phi hat fields. You get a Q tilde with some other index, and so on. So these are the states you can construct. And we want to study these now to a three loop order, and want to see what the dilatation operator is. So here, the superpotential looks as follows. So you have phi fields, then you have dashed fields, which is Q and Q tilde.
So this is something like I times G times nothing, delta I J. And then there is the other one, phi check, phi hat, Q tilde Q, which goes with I times G hat, or minus I times G hat times delta IJ. This is I, this is J, this is I. So these are the building blocks, the superpotential. And now the building block is the same as in angle 4, so you just combine one chiral with one anti-chiral vertex that you look to our combinations. So the structure is much more rich here because of the two gauge factors. It has the following form. So if I write dotted lines, that should mean it can be either of the fields Q or phi. So it can assume any of the three possibilities. So it should be this. Then you realize immediately that some of them are absent here because you don't want to look to traces. So if you see if there's a Q and you could tilde the field in this bubble here, this is the composite operator that sits down here, then this would probe a flavor trace, so you cannot have diagrams where this is in the middle line. So this here in the middle is indeed always bifundamentally meta. And then one of these has to be adjoined and the other has to be bifundamental meta. So this thing, if you work it out, has a form again, like a permutation minus. Now it's not the identity, but it's what we call lambda S because of some kind of an S-channel structure. And the permutation does what you expect, namely without any prefactors, it just switches. For example, the permutation would bring you to this. So it would basically, So it would, if this is a Q, and this is a phi hat in that case, it brings you to the Q here, so that the Q is preserved, and the phi hat becomes a phi, because it's pushed on the other side of the Q. So this is how the permutation acts, and so on. I mean, it's straightforward to worry about the others. This lambda S is a little bit more complicated because it gives factors. Namely, if this pair here, I and J, contains a phi, so it is, for example, phi, if ij is phi q, then it gives rho times phi q, and if it's something like q phi hat, it gives rho hat times q phi hat. So it gives coupling factors depending on which adjoint meta field you encounter. So on this rho here, it's basically G divided by G check, and rho hat is the reverse one. So G hat divided by G. Okay, so this is that.
What happens now at three loops? So why is that interesting to study at three loops? Now, you can think that there's something happening here because, as I said, there's always bifundamental matter separating the two sides. So here you have, for example, gauge group G, and here you have G hat. If this is a phi field, this is a Q field. Meaning that if you furnish these things with vectors, with vector fields, with gauge fields, they will now give coupling dependence additional to the dependence you encounter here in these from these structures. So meaning that this structure at higher loops is corrected by powers of rho and rho hat depending on where this gluon sits. And this is something non-trivial because of the two different gauge groups. If one... That's right. For you always have, I mean, otherwise you cannot close here the
cannot close your Q tilde if you have not an equal number of impurities. So what do you mean?
Effectively, yeah, exactly. Effectively, this in that case gives a prefactor, which is the sum of the two. You see. So, okay, so what happens at higher loops? So, as I argued now, we have to put some vector fields to get something interesting. And then we would first think, well, let's look to two loops. There is a diagram which has a vector field, which is this one. And then you have also these ones. And these ones. But here you see, this gives like an overall factor of rho and rho check. One would come with rho, the other one would come with rho check. So this gives rho times rho plus rho check times the old chi 1, which is the one loop piece. This one is different because here you get factors depending on if, so I said that here the gauge, for example, you have gauge, gauge group G and here you have G hat. Then it depends on where the fundamental and the adjoint, bifundamental and the adjoint meta sits. So if the bifundamental meta sits here, then this phase here is associated with G check, so you get a factor rho hat. And in another case, if it sits here, you get a factor rho. So this gives relative coefficients between the structure. So what basically happens here, you really get relative coefficients between the different terms. This is the difference. However, at two loops, this diagram is finite. So that, again, explains that you don't encounter anything new, because then it's just the two loop pieces, the one loop piece squared, in a sense. So you have to go to three loops. So and for this, one has to rearrange all this flavor structure a bit. Okay, so this is the field content again, I explained already. So here is for the building block, the decomposition of these fundamental building blocks in different terms. So the left one with the dotted indices can be any field you like, any field. Then up, I said, this is what happens in our sector here. It can only have a bifundamental meta field in this vertical line. And the notation here in that case is that these stars mean the impurity can sit at any of the two positions. So basically this list here, which are in parentheses, the first one, suffix and index, they give you the position of impurities. And then you start decomposing this into all the different possibilities. So for example, if you go up, then the first field on the left, in the left lower corner, is bifundamental. So this is the index position 1, you see. And then it's still the chiral structure 1. So and then you can indicate the outgoing fields, and then you see that you, in this way, you basically decompose everything in a basis for these flavor manipulations. So this is all what you can encounter at one loop. And now you have to furnish these objects with gluons at three loops to get the three loop answer. So what can happen? Or let me tell you what will happen. So we have seen at two loops this thing is finite. So what are the three loop diagrams which can appear? And then it turns out everything is like in n equal 4, but I will only write down the differences. So where really something new is happening. So there is this diagram. It's finite, but it can appear as a sub-diagram in a logarithmically divergent three-loop diagram. So for example, if you look to these, this is a structure you encounter at two loops, two of these fundamental building blocks. And now we furnish this with one vector. And if the vector sits here and here, it turns out that in n equal 4, this combination cancels out. In our theory, it does not, because if this is one of the bifundamentals, you see that this thing gives a different gauge group factor than this. So you get a difference of the two gauge group factors, and the the thing you get is something like, depending on what it is, rho minus rho hat times zeta of 3 times the structure chi 1 comma 2. With furnished with some particular positions of the in and outgoing impurities. So here you encounter something which in N equal 4 was suppressed in the zeta of 3 contribution at 3 loops. It comes in. There are other diagrams, for example, of that type, of this type, where you have kind of a correction to this bubble here. And if you sum this up, this gives a contribution to h of lambda. So this theory developed something which you could call h of rho check. And this is also something which vanishes at rho equal to rho check and is proportional to zeta of 3. And the responsibility is in these diagrams. So and then finally, coming back to the initial remark that there are from free loops on scattering terms, which you don't encounter at lower loops. What I mean by this is the following. So if you look to the dispersion relation, there can only contribute diagrams which have a single impurity sitting at one point, and the other ones have to be vacuum fields. So and then these structures, this one, and iteratively, if you continue like this, with one single bubble in one corner, are the only ones which contribute to the dispersion relation. Everything else, the number of bubbles tells you the number of magnons or impurities which has to be present to get a non-vanishing result. So at three loops, there will be diagrams of this type. And there's a minimum of two magnons necessary to have a scattering. So you will have something like this, plus something like this, plus further terms. So in this thing, in the N equal 4 case, gives you chiral function chi 1,3 with some factor of minus 4 in front or something. In this theory here, it depends again on which impurity you encounter. So if the first impurity is a Q, then this has to be an adjoint field phi hat. So the gauge coupling constant will be a G hat. And here, the same. So you get relative coefficients. This chi 1,3 decomposes into relative terms, which have relative coefficients depending on the coupling. So this is really a deformation of the scattering matrix, you would say. So okay, so these are the news. And then let me present you the result. So this is the one-loop dilatation operator in this theory. So it looks as before, just this chi 1 is now not the n equal 4 chi 1, but the one you have just seen. So in two loops, it's again more or less the same as the n equal 4 result. In fact, there is this factor rho plus rho hat, which you haven't encountered n equal 4. But the thing is, again, if you square the one-loop result, you exactly get these factors. From the fact that this was not the identity which is combined with a permutation, but it is this strange function lambda s. So it's basically just a replacement of replacing the chiral function of n equal 4 by the chiral functions of this theory. So and then the free loop result is more complicated. This is the free loop answer. So again, the first two lines, the black ones, if you square these stuff, this is the cube of the one loop result. Then you have in the green colored one, this is the deformed scattering term, so the one that would give you kind of deformation of the S matrix. Then you have in red terms which are anti-Hermitian, which is also something which at the beginning looks a little bit surprising. But the first one, this chi 2,1,3 minus 1,3,2, one encounters already in the standard ADS in the N equal 4 case. And this is just a similarity, but can be removed by similarity transformation. It turns out that also the others, you can simplify a lot by an appropriate similarity transformation. So applying this, this is the answer of a Hermitian dilatation operator. So the new pieces here
are the deformed scattering matrix in green, and in also colored highlighted the transcendental set of three terms, and they contribute to the function H of lambda in the dispersion relation, and in the second line there is an extra piece. So, okay, so this is the answer. So let me now write down the dispersion. So we take this and act on the following states. So we act on some function psi of p, which is the sum over m, e, I, and p. And then we take a bunch of phi fields, a q field, a bunch of phi hat fields, and the same psi tilde of p is basically psi of p with interchanging phi and phi hat and q and q tilde. So, and then the answer of applying this free loop piece here, now it's gone. So this is a square root 1 plus h square of g, g hat times chi 1 minus 1 plus f of g, g hat times, now it's rho minus of the ratio of the coupling is rho minus rho hat minus plus sine of p. And there's an I, 2i. So, as I said, the original Hamiltonian, as you find it from field theory, this is not Hermitian. So you find in the dispersion relation an imaginary contribution. The second remark is that this h square of lambda, so of g and p, check in our case, this is determined to 4 g bar squared minus 4 g bar to the 6 times rho minus rho hat squared times zeta of 3 plus higher orders. So g bar is the geometric mean of the couplings, and here rho and rho are again the ratios. So when you see there's no two loop piece, which has to do with the fact that the integral basis at two loops is too small to get anything that is beyond the normal square root dispersion relation. So you have to go to three loop to encounter that. And then this f starts at three loops. And this is of the form minus 2 g bar to the power 6 rho square minus rho hat square times zeta of 3. And yeah, I should say that this form here up to here, this has been determined from algebraic arguments by symmetry arguments by Gade and Rastelli, but they don't encounter these terms somehow. So even if we now do the similarity transformation on the Hamiltonian to bring this to an Hermitian form so that our dispersion relation is real, there is a term remaining that they don't see by the by their construction, interestingly. So let me remind you what the similarity transformation is. Just a couple of minutes. So you have something, D was not Hermitian, so you transform to some D prime, which is e to the minus chi d e to the chi, and then you use a non-unitary transformation now to go to a unitary dilatation operator d prime. So this chi itself is basically an expansion in Feynman diagrams, if you want. So you can sit down and think about what are the possible contributions of which loop order, which preserve all the structure. And then you write down this chi, make an ansatz, fit the coefficients, and you find the simplified result. And interestingly, the effect on the dispersion relation is that E is transformed to something, E of some, let's say, momentum P prime, so it's a change in the momentum,
the dispersion relation is as before, so it's like 1 over plus 8 square chi 1, and then there's this f piece remaining. But the imaginary part is gone, and this was reached by the fact that this similarity transformation maps the momentum p prime to some imaginary shifted one. So it's g r to the power 4 rho square minus rho hat square times zeta of 3. So in a sense, what is puzzling here, it seems that, I mean, the fields q and q tilde somehow one could think of are not the elementary excitations, maybe, because they have a complex dispersion relation and you have some kind of already complex momenta unnecessary to get a real energy. But of course, I mean, if you pair them, this is also important, if you pair them, so remember that we have, it's a bifundamental matter, so they always have to come in pairs to get gauge invariant objects, then these imaginary parts drop out anyway. So, and then finally, two remarks. So, what does this calculation teach us for other sectors, and maybe for looking for integrability, or also for integrability in other sectors? So the first remark is that this h of gg hat is maximal transcendental as in the ABJ M cases. So this is somehow seems to be, yeah, from the point of view of Feynman diagrams, a property which maybe one could, at a certain point, fix the structure, what kind of transcendentality one really expects. So, and then the second is that also in the ABJM case, or in the ABJ, I should say, case, so with two different, so with this flux and two different Toff couplings, one would expect a deformation of the S matrix. In that case, at 6 loop. Then, in a sense, the diagrams will be of that form. So, remember that you have an alternating chain of Ys and Y daggers. And then you have, depending on the phases, you assign the different ranks of the two Toff couplings. So you have M and M hat, for example. And now it is the six-loop diagram which contributes to scattering would be this one, for example, for with furniture with two gluons. So that would give relative coefficients from a six-loop on in the scattering terms. So what I say is that maybe for really checking integrability, in that case, one would have to go to six loops. So the final remark is on other sectors. So in the interpolating basically, it was this chiral sector which had, because of the bifundamental matters, two gauge couplings. But of course, there should also be sectors corresponding to, so sectors which correspond to the SL2 and SU1/1 of n equal 4, where basically, because you take the adjoint fermions or derivatives, covariant derivatives, there should be only one gauge coupling present. So in that cases, you would say that in principle this is identical. So there couldn't be any deviation.
apart from the fact where you have a loop coming in from bifundamental matter.
So
since the one-loop self-energies are zero, the first thing where this can happen is a two-loop. So you would have something like this. This diagram. And this is, in fact, the one of the ones giving the finite chiral self-energy at two loops. So here, from this, you find the self-energy correction, which is something like minus 2 lambda bar squared p squared 1 minus epsilon. So this is p here. And then there is the integral, which is this, which is proportional to z3, by the way. But the important thing is that this here depends on lambda bar. So it's a product of the couplings g and g. So if you think now about this, since this is finite, you expect that first deviations from the n equal 4 case should appear at three loops, because then this appears as a finite substructure in a three-loop diagram, which is logarithmically divergent, and then the other coupling constant comes in. So also here, it would be very interesting, I think, to analyze these sectors to three loops.
Okay, so
I'm cool with it. Thank you.
Expansion in a rho minor rho hat, can you reformulate it in terms of some calculation and equals 4 of some correlators? If you expand the anomalous dimension in the difference of rho and rho hat.
So you want, you're asking about summing this, if the summation in terms of this dispersion relation is valid or... In what sense?
Oh, imagine you have an anomalous dimension as a function of rho minus rho hat and average coupling. If you expand this function in the difference,
yes,
can you formulate the expansion coefficients as some objects and n equals 4?
I mean, in principle, at least from... Okay, a possibility could be that these are the diagrams which don't no longer cancel. Like I said, for example, is this what you mean? I mean, to identify it grammatically, which ones are the... Did I get it right? Or? Okay. No idea.
There are four, there are six integrals in the three, six distinct integrals, right, in the three loop. Are these completely distinct, or is there some sense in which one can be obtained from another by a kind of degeneration?
By?
Can the integrals be related in a sense of coalescence?
You want that the integrals are related in some way.
I'm just thinking by analogy. Is there some way that the six distinct integrals,
yes,
could in fact be obtained from one generic one by various coalescences?
You could in principle write down something which only contains triangles, for example, and by contracting numerator momenta, you can of course reduce them to different. From one with different numerator arrangements, you can, by canceling propagators, you can get to the different ones. But I don't see that, there are, of course, relations between some of them. Like,
recursively this I2 and I3, so the one where you add a triangle. You see some, there's a construction which recursively gives them, but I don't see how a generic relation, I don't see how they should go.
I'm just thinking in terms of analogies. If you take partitions of four, there are six partitions of four distinct objects.
Okay.
So for instance, this happens in integral systems, classical integral systems, you have exactly six different Pamlebe singularities, which consist of four distinct poles, three and one, two and two, two and one, and so on. These and there's exactly six cases, but they all come from one generic case, which is the four distinct. So I just thought maybe the six integrals have some analogy.
Possible. I mean, that's...
I'd like to know more about this this interpolating theory. It looks like the cascading gauge theory, right? Except that you take n equals n hat, or what is the difference? I know you have n equals 2, they have n equals 1, but I forgot what is actually the difference. And do you know anything about the dual gravity or string theory? I mean, what is known?
So in this case, the dual gravity, there is a paper did also by Gade, Pomoni, and Rastelli. I haven't looked to it. It's some kind of non-critical string theory, but I haven't looked at all to this to the strong coupling case. Because this was already, I mean, yeah, I really only concentrated on weak coupling here.
Yeah, I know. It's more a question to them, but okay, thanks.
I would like to go back to the interpretation of the complex dispersion relation. So you said that one possible interpretation is that the excitations are not fundamental, that they decay, I guess, to more fundamental excitations. Do you have any idea what those fundamental excitations might be? Any clue on that?
It's very difficult to say. Because the point is that these things, as the magnons, for example, they have delta minus j equal 1 as an angle 4. So you would maybe, if you look to some compound, you would have to have something which has delta minus j 1 half and take two of them or something. So it's very hard to say, but I would say that from that point of view, it's something, I mean, it's not in the theory. It's not some magnons of other sectors or something like that. But this is open for the, I mean, because, at the end, you get this complex dispersion relation, but, well, the interpretation is just a proposal.